independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Donald Trump took that ride down the escalator. We didn't know what to expect. We knew it would be a show. He turned politics into a spectator sport that maybe nobody had ever really seen before. I get it. Reality TV show, brash, bold, big. But along the way, there were things that he talked about. The economy. I've always said that 90% of us vote with our pocketbook. Who we think is going to handle the economy best is how we vote. And a lot of people said, I'm sick and tired of politics, the same old same. Here's a guy who we know can't be bought because he's a billionaire. Not going to be bought. So while he was fighting with Hillary Clinton, while he was fighting with the other Republicans, along the way, he mentioned things like jobs. And then he would go into his tirade and you'd tweet something, and then he would talk more about jobs. Then he would talk about tax reform. Then he would talk about regulations. He would talk about everything that he could that dealt with the economy and money. That's vitally important. When your life is good, when you have less stress, when you have money in the bank, when you know your job is secure, or that you have elsewhere to go that will pay you better, if you want to take that option because the economy is good, guess what? Winning. That's what that is. Winning. Focus on the wins, not the losses. Focus on the wins. Because remember, the losses are temporary, as are the wins. The problem is we have hyper-focused on the losses. And some of those are things that we need to focus on, healthcare being a prime example. But I can't blame healthcare on him. They had 7 years, and by they, I mean the GOP, to do something, and they failed miserably at it, and they're back at the drawing board, and eventually, over time, I think they'll get something done. Whether it will be right or wrong, I don't know, because I don't know what it's going to look like. And based on politics and the way that things are done, I'm going to say there's a good chance it's going to flounder. But you never know. But for Trump, getting your house in order is going to take some time. Getting away from the laughter that people feel, getting away from the snide remarks, getting away from the late night jokes and the Saturday Night Live skits, that's not going to happen overnight. But you know what is going to happen? If you continue to win, if you continue to push forward, if you continue to do the things that you want to do and slowly change the culture of politics, by being the businessman that people thought they were bringing into office, all of the other stuff, Russia, the failure in healthcare, a lot of this other stuff, it goes away. Healthcare is going to deal with itself over time. There's nothing else you're going to be able to do at this point in time. But a lot of that other stuff, it fades away and it becomes noise in the background. It becomes just a It goes from being a loud scream to a little bit of a rumble to just a peep. Focus on the wins. That is vitally important. Tax reform, regulation reform, jobs. You get those things going, people are happy because they've got more money in their bank. They have more money in their checks. They feel like they're secure in the life. They may still be living paycheck to paycheck, but that paycheck's getting bigger and the stress is getting smaller. They're happy with that. And over time, as that continues to go, all of the other stuff will fade away. Focus on the victories. Trump spoke today to small business owners about a lot of stuff going on in the world, from the stock market and elsewhere. And this is what he needs to do, more of this. And you watch what happens.
Our stock market has reached an all-time high today. unemployment just hit a 16-year low.
Unemployment, 16-year low. Now, we know those numbers are fake. But you know what? The Democrats celebrate them, so you do what you want. I know they're fake. But it's still low. Still makes you look good. Right? Stock market's at an all-time high. Gas prices down. People feeling confident that maybe if they left their job today, they can find a new job tomorrow, even if they're not even saying to themselves, I need a job first before I jump. Saying, you know what? I feel the economy is strong enough at this point in time that I can make the move even without having another job because I feel confident enough in what's going on out there in the economy, in the workplace world, in the environment that we're in right now, that things will be okay. And despite the fact that the numbers aren't mind-blowing, people feel confident, and that is the thing that you need to focus on. We've seen it in sports teams. We have seen it in entertainers. We have seen it in music people. We've seen it everywhere that sometimes we'll forgive people their ills and their missteps if they win. We forgive people. Right now, he hasn't had a lot of wins. I'm not going to BS you on that. This Mooch thing and a lot of the way that this stuff has gone in the past has not been very good. So focus on the things that you know. This is what I was brought here for, the economy. People feel confident. I need to ride with that. Absolutely. Regulations. What are we going to do with that, Mr. President?
We're ending job-killing regulation. These folks know that very well. And pursuing bold tax cuts so that our companies can thrive, compete, and grow.
Regulations, tax cuts, both of those things in your wheelhouse. That's why you're here. Obviously, immigration as well. You're building a wall with sound. The flood of immigration is now a trickle because people are afraid. Let it play out while you figure out how you're going to build your wall or whatever it is that you're going to try to do. But just the thought process right now of talking about a wall, building a wall, talking tough on immigration is scaring people. It's a victory. Take them as they come. Each day an improvement. Focus on the good. Let everything else just be noise. I'm here to do this job. I came here to get the economy back rolling. I came here to make America great again, and when you do that with the economy, that's going to happen. I came here to fix the overregulation of everything in this country. I came here to fix the tax implications that are insane. And along with that, I'm going to work with the Republicans to fix Obamacare, to fix some of the other things that are going on out there. But I'm going to hyper-focus on this because this is where the victory is. And if I do that, I win. It's as simple as that. It's not a magical thing. It's like you want to lose weight? Eat less, work out more. It's not magic, right? It's not. It's pretty simple. It's the same thing. Simple. Do the things that we want you to do. And I think some of the other things that we forget is we brought a politician in our country with zero political experience and a hopes that he would run the government like a business. He's a third of the government, right? Executive branch. Legislative, of course, the court systems. They don't want to run like a business. They want to run like government. You want to run it a certain way. They want to run it another way. So what you have to do is change the culture by being subtle. Change the culture by victories. Change the culture by changing the way that people are viewing things, hearing things, understanding things. Change that culture. I know you want to hit everybody over the head, and I know you want to get in everybody's face, but sometimes being a little bit more subtle is going to go a long way. You catch more flies with honey. So why not hyper-focus on the things that are going to bring you the most, as far as your wins goes, for the people, the individuals of this country. If people are winning and they feel that they're winning and they feel like their life's a little bit better tomorrow than it was today, and it's going to be a better a month from now than it is right now, and it's going to be better a year from now because they're no longer living paycheck to paycheck, but they're able to save a little bit. They're able to get a little bit ahead. They're able to feel like they have comfort without crazy stress. Guess what? That's a victory. And maybe the biggest victory of all. And then what ends up happening is the media, the fake news and the real news, have to focus on things because people are sick and tired of hearing the other stuff, the barrage of negativity all the time. And they start to say to themselves, hey, you know what? I don't care anymore. My life is good. Oh, yeah. They got to pay attention.
You don't hear too much from the media, but I think the media is going to actually be forced to cover it pretty soon. They're going to have no choice.
Give them no choice. Give them no choice. The best you can do. All this other stuff will die. All this other stuff will fade away. 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the program, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. Go to ChadBensonShow.com. Grab your podcast there. We've got a new FBI agent. Christopher Ray is his name. Congratulations to him. W-R-A-Y. Took over for James Comey. Sally Yates, but, you know, James Comey. So this is the third person that will be helming the FBI under President Trump, even though one of them was interim. We'll see how he does. But he got through pretty easily. Senate confirmed 92-5. So we'll see how he does, but he's got a big job, and, you know, Godspeed to you. Godspeed to you, sir. It's the Chad Benson Show.
There's no turning back now.
What do we got to lose?
You are in it up to your ears.
You dented my boob. You totally dented it.
Literally.
You know who you are.
Boo, man.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
Is this a freak show or what?
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 So, what's next in our dealings with a not-so-tall individual with a bad haircut, lifts in his shoes, and an anger for the West? Of course, I'm talking about Kim Jong-un. What's next for him? Tillerson was busily doing things today, talking about the likes of North Korea and trying to once again assure North Korea several different things, one of them being this.
We have reaffirmed our position towards North Korea, that what we are doing, we do not seek a regime change.
They don't seek a regime change. Well, then what do they seek? Because these guys are firing off missiles. They're threatening us. Their posture says that they're angry and that they're coming to get us because the West is evil and we are the West. So it's easy for them to attack us because of their hatred. Arr. So what's next? Well, we have done four tests this year of ICBMs from Vandenberg, normally do one. And the reason is pretty simplistic. We're showing a strength and making sure our stuff works. You know, it's always one of those things, right? You want to make sure all of our stuff works. Remember the first Iraq War? A lot of that stuff was Soviet. It didn't work. We want to make sure our stuff works. And it works. We dust them off once a year. But now we've done it four times. Four. That's a lot. That's a lot. But what is next? Is there a diplomatic solution? Once again, James Rex Tillerson talking about us and them and whether or not we can even be friends.
And we're trying to convey to the North Koreans, we are not your enemy. We're not your threat. But you are presenting an unacceptable threat to us. And we have to respond.
So what's going to be next? Well, I'll tell you this. There is not going to be a nuclear war. There isn't. There will be more rhetoric. There will be more screaming. There will be more anger. There will be more of the things that he does because it is a game. It was a game with his father. It was a game with his grandfather. But really, his father and him, when it comes to the West, is that they are showmen. How do you get money out of the West to pay for just enough to keep your regime in power and their lights on and all of that stuff? You threaten. You throw a fit. It's just easier to hand them some money and tell them to go away. And they know that. They get that. That's what this is. No more than that. Now, the closer they get to having a weapon, the more that people are taking notice. But the truth is, he knows, because his generals have told him, because the Chinese have told him. If you are to fire something off and it has a nuclear capability on top of it and it lands somewhere like North America, and I say North America because I think their aim would be horrible and it would land in Ottawa or somewhere and kill a bunch of people, that we are not going to protect you. We are not going to be the referee in this fight. And if you think the Canadians are going to respond, you should think again, because the first response is coming for the United States of America, and you will cease to exist. All your dreams of staying at the big table, all your dreams of continuing to be North Korea will end immediately. Because we have 1.5 billion people that don't want to see our economy crash so you can play a game with people's lives. But they're not going to do much helping anymore outside of that, is China. So what's next for them is the same old same. Firing missiles off, threatening to destroy us, saying all the things that he says, but never actually doing it. Rex Tillerson and the U.S. will play this dancey game with him for a while, and then slowly but surely, money will magically appear from somewhere, and he'll shut up for 6 weeks or 6 months, and then we'll go right back at it. Because that's what this dance is about. That's what's next for North Korea and the West. Man, good interview, Straight Ed. Todd Young's going to join us. We're going to talk about activist judges. We're going to talk about how they really play a part in our world, what we can do to change the way that they play a part in our world, and what's ahead for us when it comes to sanctuary cities and things like that. Todd Young joins us, Straight Ed. Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
I tell you what, Trump really came to power as far as everybody gravitating towards him, when he talked about building a wall, when he talked about getting rid of sanctuary cities, when he talked about all of these things when it comes to immigration illegally into this country. But just because you want to do those things doesn't mean that you can. And a lot of these places, and a place like the place that I am now, California, we're insane at times. And instead of having just sanctuary cities, we're just going to have a sanctuary state. How about that? And it's easily protected by crazy activist judge. Joining us now is Todd Young. He's the executive director of Southeast Legal Foundation. And Todd, we hear this word activist judge, activist judge, activist judge. And we see the way that people judge shop when it comes to things like the travel, you know, ban and things like that. What exactly, I mean, when we hear those words, activist judge, what are we talking about?
Well, and it's a good point, too. Thanks for having me. It's a good point, too, to point out that what we're seeing now is that folks are shopping their cases to places where they're going to find judges who seem to be perfectly willing to write new law and make things up as they go. And that's kind of where we are right now. And the Ninth Circuit, right where you are, is a perfect example of that. You've got one judge in particular who showed up when the temporary travel ban came up, and he was more than happy to sort of use a political analysis to render his decision. And then that same judge, Judge William Orrick, showed up when the sanctuary city's policy came through, not even a new law, simply trying to enforce existing law. He then found these sort of political reasonings for coming up with a decision that essentially gives this one judge the power to stop the entire country cold. And that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about an activist judge, not someone who looks at existing law and says, okay, I'm limited in what I can say here because this law, you know, appears to be constitutional, and so therefore we're going to just allow the government to do what it's going to do or for this person to do what they're going to do. I'm going to find a new way so that this thing can move forward outside the law, outside existing, you know, the way that we want judges and the way that the founding fathers really wanted the judges to be, very limited in scope.
You know, we talk about judges, like how does one become what, you know, somebody on the Ninth Circuit? Because it's not just one of those things where they move on up. It's eventually it's an appointee and the whole nine yards. And as an administration, you want to appoint the people that you think are going to give you the kind of oomph to stand behind the laws that you and the bills that you put out there.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, the irony of this is that because they're appointed and a president has to appoint them and then they have to go through the Senate confirmation process, it's become like as if we think that it's just set in stone and this is the way that it has to be. But in fact, that's the way it's become. So Obama, and then there are plenty of Clinton holdovers as well, appointed a ton of federal judges. Those federal judges have demonstrated, not all of them, but a handful of them, enough to cause folks like me who live in this world of judges and the law and cases and so forth and the Constitution, most importantly, to sit up and take notice to say, wait a second, we're seeing a sequence of decisions here, whether it's on the temporary travel ban, whether it's on sanctuary cities, you name it. Those cases are being brought before those judges so that those judges will do what a politician hopes that they will do rather than what the law dictates. And that's exactly how this happens. And they're appointed for life. There's no way to get them out other than by an impeachment process, which happens almost never. The way to fix this, or at least the way to begin to address this, is for Congress to take its role to limit the courts. It can do that. The lower courts in the federal system are an invention underneath Article 1. Congress created them. Congress can regulate them. Congress can limit their jurisdiction. And I think in the case of the Ninth Circuit, the Congress ought to split it up. It's just too big, too unwieldy, and we're seeing too many decisions come down that then you keep your fingers crossed that, oh, I hope the Supreme Court fixes this.
Talking to Todd Young here, who is the executive director of the Southeast Legal Foundation. Todd, you know, you talk about the size of the Ninth Circuit Court. You talk about all these cases that go there, but really it's 1 in 10,000 cases that actually get to the Supreme Court. That's insane.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Here's the deal. I think most people think, oh, okay, no matter how crazy the Ninth Circuit gets, the Supreme Court will fix it. They'll clean it up. And they're only taking about 100 cases a year. They're turning away 10,000 cases for every one case that they take, which means that 99.7% of all cases that go up on appeal are decided once and for all at the circuit court level. That's the law. That's the binding precedent that's set. And so we can't just sit here and say, okay, well, the Supreme Court's going to take care of it, because the Supreme Court may never get to that case or your case or my case. They're going to get to what they can get to, and they can't fix everything. So we can't just count on the Supreme Court. We've got to figure out how to better operate within the system here.
And it's insane, because right now you've got all these cases that are trying to get the Supreme Court. But the sanctuary city thing is a huge thing for us, for Californians, for Americans who don't want to see the sanctuary cities, don't want to see the insanity of all. You know, what are we going to do to get Congress to act on things like this? Because it is frustrating. You know, I mean, here in California, we just paid somebody who's had their sanctuary city civil rights violated some $220,000. What are we going to do? Because it is getting frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And whether or not there needs to be new law, one thing that is happening, and I think it's worth noting, is that this administration, Attorney General Sessions, is starting to enforce the existing law. I think that's why you're seeing a huge decline in the number of people crossing the border illegally now. And I think that it's going to begin to play out even in terms of these sanctuary cities. Keep in mind, existing federal law and what, you know, this big threat of withholding federal funds, which are discretionary, by the way. The federal government doesn't have to give those federal funds to sanctuary cities or to any city. But the law requires, and this is what Attorney General Sessions is expecting these sanctuary cities to do. Simply say that you are not going to have a policy that prohibits, that bans your local law enforcement from reporting an illegal who's detained to the federal authorities. Just don't have a policy that prevents them from doing it. It doesn't say you have to. It says that you can't have a policy that says you can't. And that's what this whole thing is about. It's not we're now forcing them to report to us. We're now forcing them. They're not forcing anything. So my question is, what about those hundreds of millions of dollars in the last 10 years that have gone to these places? What have you been spending the money on? Clearly, you haven't been spending it on the money that the federal government expected you to spend the money on. So I'd like to know where that money is. Maybe that's a lawsuit in itself.
You know, and you talk about that, and I looked at losses. I said yesterday, the way that sanctuary cities are going to start to falter is eventually ICE is going to go into the streets, and all those people who are activists and don't want the police or the cities to be a part of anything are going to see the hardworking people that have come here illegally but haven't really broken any laws outside of coming here illegally. They're going to start to see them picked up and detained, and uh-oh, that's not what they wanted. And eventually, lawsuits are going to start to come to the cities because they're going to say, you had somebody detained. There was a warrant for his arrest. You decided to let him go. He committed a crime or she committed a crime that caused harm or death. And now we're going to hold you accountable. And I think that's eventually what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, that was the Kate Steinle case, as a matter of fact. Now, in that case, you had a federal judge who said, well, you know what? You can't make that connection. That's in the Ninth Circuit. Once you start seeing this play out in other circuits, in other parts of the country, which we are and we will see that happen, then you get what's called a circuit split, meaning one part of the country, one circuit holds one way. Ninth Circuit obviously is going to hold its way. Then the Supreme Court says, ah, we better take this because now there's not one standard for the whole country. There's two or three or four or five standards. We got to get this thing straight. That's what we're hoping for here, is that eventually, that's one of the ways you get to be one of those lucky 100 who are heard every year by the Supreme Court. And I feel very good about the Supreme Court at this point. They certainly pushed back against the injunctions on the temporary travel ban. And now they're going to hear a full case this fall. And I think you're going to see the right kind of decision making. In fact, the new Justice Gorsuch was right in there with Alito and Thomas and that group to say those things, to say, you know, in the Ninth Circuit really overstepped here. You know, they're making political decisions. They're not making decisions based on the law, clear law, not foggy law, clear law, and they're making bad decisions. They're using political standards, not legal standards, and that's the danger here. And that's exactly, and I talk about this in the piece, what the Founding Fathers, particularly Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, they were terrified of unaccountable judges. They were terrified of that because they said, that's the only branch that doesn't answer to the people. And it's time, that's why they designed it the way they did, it's time that Congress take that role to actually step in and do some things that it is absolutely empowered to do under the Constitution.
Talking to Todd Young, Executive Director of Southeastern Legal Foundation's great piece, Activist Federal Judges Loom Over Trump Sanctuary Cities Policy. You know, one of the things, the funds, again, if you hit people in the pocketbook, cities in the pocketbooks, we all know that that changes everybody. It doesn't matter if it's private business, if it's a singular individual, or if it's cities. And the federal funds, if you've already allocated those, you can't go back and take them away. But next year, you haven't allocated those monies, and they're going to really feel it. And I think that's where we're going to start to see situations where cities and states are going to start to rethink their policies when they don't get those federal funds rolling in.
Yeah, and there are two different kinds of federal funds here. In the one instance, there are those ones that are already appropriated, you know, the money, okay, nothing we can do about it, maybe. There's a second batch, though, that's almost as big, and those are the discretionary funds. And the Attorney General does have authority over that money through the Justice Department and other agencies to say, you know what, it's discretionary. We actually have this pot of money. We want to achieve a particular end, and we don't have to give you this money. So late in the Obama administration, you had the Inspector General for the Justice Department come out and say, in order to enforce existing law, and to get those discretionary funds, every agency, every city is going to have to sign a piece of paper that says, we do not have a policy that prohibits our law enforcement from working with or speaking to or reporting to federal, like ICE or federal, you know, federal authorities. Not saying they have to, just saying we're not going to have a policy. Now, You and I both know when you're talking about San Francisco, when you're talking about Chicago, when you're talking about New York, when you're talking about any number of cities in this country, they're going to be really hard-pressed to have to sign that piece of paper, because then they do subject themselves to all kinds of problems if they lie. So do they have a policy? Well, you got to tell us. And if we find out that you do have a policy, we find out that your law enforcement can't speak with federal agents, can't speak with ICE, can't let them know that they've got this dangerous person who's going to go loose here in the next 48 hours, we have a real problem on our hands. And so withholding those discretionary funds is a first method to kind of try to change that behavior.
Last question. We appreciate you coming on. Todd Young, Executive Director of Southeast Legal Foundation, talking about his article about activist judges. Flash forward 12 months from now, what do you foresee when it comes to not only the activist judges, but as far as these sanctuary cities? Are some states like let's be real, California is going to stand pat, but there are other cities out there where it's a lot different, where you've got a 50-50 kind of pull as far as politicians, and it's a little bit more purple than California. Where do you think nationwide this thing's going?
Well, I think a couple of things. First, I think that, as you point out, public pressure will be such that you will have more and more states, like my home state here in Georgia, but others that who have done the same thing, at the state level say, you can't be a sanctuary city, and here's what that means, and literally define what it means. Right now, we kind of use that term loosely. There's all different variations and shades and varieties of it, but go ahead and define it and say, you can't be that way in our state. Texas has that right now, which is why Texas is going after the few remaining sanctuary cities in its own state. So you're going to see that. That's how the elected branches respond to this kind of thing, public pressure. The second thing you're going to see, and it may even be one of our lawsuits, it may be somebody else, but I think you're going to see direct challenges to sanctuary cities in terms of what their policies are actually doing. We have, for example, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, out there literally training cities and jurisdictions how to enact policies that maybe kind of skirt the law, but in some cases just go right over the line. How do you become a sanctuary city? And and it's couched in all this very cozy kind of language. But the truth is, they're instructing them, they're teaching them how to do this. And so, wouldn't surprise me to see litigation that not only involves a city doing it, but the ACLU teaching them how to do it. And then you kind of open the door to now let everybody take a look at how this thing really looks behind the scenes. It's political. It's political. It's certainly not legal.
That's for sure. Todd Young's his name, serves as executive director for the Southeast Legal Foundation. Kick-ass interview, Todd, by the way. Very, very kick-ass. A lot of times you get people like, I don't know. Todd Young, you kicked it. You kicked ass today, knocked it out of the park. We appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Man, you know what? You do. I mean, producer Phil, you back me up, man. Sometimes it's a crapshoot, right? And like this, he kicked ass. He did. It's great. It's absolutely great. Straight ahead, more of the Chad Benson Show.
You call it ridiculous. We call it reality with a twist. Say what?
Say what? Not a shocker, but people should know this. If you have a dog, dog owners tend to be more active than non-dog owners. According to a new study out of Britain. And this is especially important for people who are older. By older, I mean 40 to 70, not young people. We're always out and about doing stuff when you're young. But as you get older, you need the exercise the most, is tend to be that part in life where we don't get the exercise the most. But what they found in the experiment that they did in the study groups is the people who had dogs tend to be more active because the dogs needed to get out. So no matter what the weather was, at some point in time, you would get the dog out. And on average, people who own dogs did about 30 minutes more of exercise or moving throughout the day than people who didn't have dogs. It also showed that that decreased no matter whether you had a dog or not, if the weather was bad. Shocker. Say what? Talking to yourself is good. Relieves anxiety, according to a new study. If you have anxiety, talking to yourself in third person meaning it's like you're talking to somebody who's there, who's you, but not really you, can actually soothe and calm nerves.
Phil's a great producer.
Phil is a great producer, but we can't figure that out until Third Person Thursday. But we refer to ourselves in Third Person Thursday, so that's a little different. And you know what? I think for a lot of people, talking to themselves, mumbling under their breaths, or just saying certain things, I mean, I think we've all done it. I do it all the time. And, you know, it doesn't make me crazy, but it's a good thing. It is a good thing. It soothes and calms our nerves. So if you're feeling a little anxious, if you're feeling a little worried, if you've got a lot on your mind and that stress is starting to pile on top of you, talk to yourself. Little calm piece of advice, little calm piece of just soothing, relaxing, you can do this, will actually calm your nerves enough. So take that. Solid fun interview. Todd Young, post that on the old podcast. Grab it, ChadBensonShow.com. Text the program, 323-538-2423. Always call us as well if you would like to chat. We'll let you do that, 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show.